Okay. Hi, friends. What's up? We have several new folks tonight. So welcome to Midweek in the City, y'all. I'm glad y'all are here. And if it's your first time, we are just as chaotic and silly as we seem. So this is not different from our normal. But I'm glad y'all are here. And I'm glad you've grabbed some food. We have a ton of food tonight. So I do not have, y'all, I've had so many announcements all semester. But now that this weekend is retreat, I have very few announcements for you. So sometimes I feel like that's half of what I'm doing every night. Okay, so November 15th is our next church Communities Under the Bridge night. Okay, so if you're new with us, this is something that we started in September. So Communities Under the Bridge is not far from here, and it is a really lovely nonprofit that we get to serve with. And so on the third Friday of every month, we're going to be there serving a meal and just ministering to folks over there. Yeah, Kathy. So there's like a parking lot, right? You mean like around that building? Oh yes, I can send that out. I don't know off the top of my head the exact street address, but, yes, it is nearby. And if you search like in Google Maps or Apple Maps, Communities Under the Bridge, it is something that pops up. But, so that is coming November 15th. Okay, so let me know if you'd like to sign up for that one. This is always a good time. It's really easy and really fulfilling. So, come on November 15th. And then, y'all, there's only two more weeks of Midweek in the City after tonight. I know. So next week, we have our testimony night. And this is something that we've done every fall, because especially after retreat, which is coming this weekend, especially after retreat and after all semester, it is good to be able to share what God has done. And so, you know, normally we have guest speakers and we're talking about everything under the sun, but it's good every once in a while to pause and reflect on how the Lord has moved. And so if you want to share your testimony, this is also, so I'm not on the mic all the time. We want to hear from y'all. And so if you have a testimony that you want to share, it doesn't have to be an hour long. I'd prefer it not be, okay? You don't have to make it a huge thing, but 5 minutes, that's all you need. So if you have a story of how the Lord has moved and you want to share it, then let me know, okay? Over the last year, over the last 6 months, even after retreat, if you encounter the Lord in a way that you want to share, let me know, okay? And we're going to hear from y'all next week. And then I'm really excited for this. We did this last year, and it was one of my favorite midweeks that we've ever done. But on November 13th, which is our series finale, so to speak, or season finale. This isn't going to be the last midweek ever, but our season finale of midweek, we're going to do a panel discussion with ministers from other denominations. And so last time we did this, it was a Orthodox priest and a Methodist minister. And so we're talking to folks from other denominations and talking about what we have in common, what is different between our traditions, those kind of things. So I'm excited for that. That one's always a really fun discussion, because we end up finding that we talk a lot about differences between Christian traditions. We have a lot more in common than we have difference between one another. And so I'm excited for y'all to be there for that. And y'all, I think that's it, because retreat is this weekend. So what I've been announcing since July is happening. So if you've signed up, you should have gotten an email from me. And if you didn't, let me know. But it's going to be a really fun weekend. Maybe bring an umbrella or rain jacket, okay? Because it looks like there might be a little rain. But I don't think enough to totally throw us off. So maybe just enough to cool it down, you know? So make sure you do that. But it's going to be a really fun weekend. So let me know if you have questions. David. Oh, yes. And y'all, when I say it's the last midweek in the city, I mean it's the last midweek in the city in this room. So we're going to do some really fun things in November and December. We always do fun holiday events and those kind of things. And so be on the lookout for that. We always go get ice cream in the Pearl, and we go riverboat caroling, and we do all kinds of tomfoolery. So, and our Christmas party is not that far away, even though tomorrow's Halloween. I know it feels like Christmas is right around the corner. So know that those things are coming. But I think that's all my announcements. I love having very few announcements. So without further ado, would y'all welcome Brent Salter up here? A lot of y'all have met Brent because he is a church member. He's one of our single adults family. And if y'all remember, some of you were with us when he did a tour with the single adults, like a year and a half ago, not that long ago. Yeah. And so we are really excited to have you because you are our expert on the city of San Antonio. or at least that's what I'm deciding is is your title. So thank you for joining us.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Happy to be here, yeah. And it's great to see y'all. And yeah, I normally go caroling on the river barge, and that's like it. So it's really good to increase from one time a year that I see folks to two times a year.
Yeah, hopefully it's great.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And caroling is kind of like, this is a rift that has grown in the single adults ministry. We have a very serious group of carolers that take that word very literally. And then we have those that are okay with Mariah Carey, you know. So just know that going in, it's a mixed bag of songs. And caroling is a loose term.
Yeah, and raise your hand if you haven't done it before. Who has not been caroling on the barges? So last year, I mean, you see all kinds of things in San Antonio, and I can tell you that because I'm an expert.
Yeah.
But last year on the river barge, we saw an entire parade of dachshunds. Remember?
They were sweaters.
Like in sweaters. More than 100 dachshunds. Like, what? I mean, I didn't count them, but there were a lot of dachshunds. And
it was
so
amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, they don't sing, but anyway.
Yeah, to be clear, they're not caroling. We were caroling and there was a parade of dachshunds. But yes, join us for caroling. Okay, so Brent, tell us a little bit about you, about your story, growing up and your calling and vocation and those things, and how you got involved in the... I'm going to let you explain what you do. I'm not equipped to explain that very well. So yeah, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, so my name's Brent, and I was born in Austin. And I said, Mom, Dad, nice to meet you. Now let's talk about the city. And I moved here when I was 3 days old. So I've been able to make compelling arguments ever since I was 3 days old. And so that's me. But I moved to Bull Verde when I was a kid, and I always lived in Bull Verde. I have 2 brothers, 2 sisters. As a kid, I went to a much smaller church, and I always loved San Antonio, but I was never kind of a member of the community here. I always felt like an outsider since I lived in Bull Verde, right? And so every time I came to San Antonio, Megan, it was really exciting. I was like, wow. And I can still remember as a kid going to the Riverwalk. Did any of you go down to the Riverwalk when you're like 5 or 6 years old or whatnot? Like super early. And I remember there was this hotel with the Riverwalk flowing through it. And there was a player piano on the balcony that the keys of the Steinway would move. And my parents were like, it's an invisible man playing that piano. And I was like, San Antonio is the most amazing city, like invisible people. And anyway, so I was delusional. But I loved this city. And when I was in high school, I came here to First Baptist as a senior, and I met a lot of good friends. In fact, one of my lifelong best friends I met on the first day of Sunday school here at First Baptist. I walked into the room. There were like, I don't know, 25 people, and I was intimidated. I told you I always felt like an outsider, right? You don't like that feeling walking into a room of strangers. And there was an empty seat and a guy sitting there, and he said, hey, you can sit here. And I said, oh, cool. And so I sat, and he said, my name's Blake. I said, I'm Brent. And Blake Nauman and I became really good friends from a young age, at least senior year. And the point is this. As I got to know some of these youth that had grown up in San Antonio for most or all of their lives, the reoccurring thing I heard them say is, I cannot wait to leave San Antonio. They're like, this is the worst city ever. And I was like, oh, that's weird, because to me, it's always been the best city ever.
There's invisible people. Do they not know?
Let me tell you about my friend who plays invisible piano. And so as a youth, I started to really see that I was different and how much that I love San Antonio. You know, we have a youth choir here at First Baptist called Chapel Singers. Chapel Singers rehearsal was at 4 p.m. on Sundays. I lived all the way in Bull Verde. It was impractical to go back to Bull Verde and to come back to church. And so instead, I would spend all day in downtown. After church services were over, I would walk around, and I'd walk the Riverwalk, and I'd go look at different buildings, and I'd read historical plaques, and I was like, this is a great place. So ironically, today, I have a tour company, and I walk some of those same routes that I used to walk as a teen waiting for youth choir to start here at the church. And I love this city. So in 2018, I started a walking tour company called Amigo Walking Tours. People are like, do you do horse carriage tours? And the answer is no. We do walking tours.
What about bus tours?
Bus tours, boat tours, the answer is no. So yeah, much to people's confusion and disappointment. Yeah. But anyway, it's been an adventure. I never planned to have a tour company, but God sends us surprises sometimes. And the tour company has been real small at moments. It's been real big at moments. This summer, we had a tour that had 2,000 people come on it. So that was a big moment. David was there, and maybe some of you as well. So. It was not 2,000 people on one tour, but it felt like it. Every single tour. That's right. So anyway, lots of work in history, lots of work doing tours. The other thing I do, people find pretty interesting, I give away money for a living. That's my job. Every year I give away $9 million. Today I'm looking for one person I could give, I don't know, $10,000 to. If there, no. It doesn't work like that per se, but it is my job to oversee grants for Baptist Health Foundation. I'm vice president of programs, and so we work with around 400 nonprofits to hand out that money, to watch the money, to make sure it's correctly utilized. So yeah, that's my job, is at the intersection of history and loving our city from the streets, and then going into an office and looking at Excel spreadsheets and counting gold coins and saying, let's show our love of the city in a different fashion. And when Megan asked for us to talk about seeking the good in the city, which is going to come up, I thought I should clarify I am no expert in seeking the good of a city. But I am alongside a lot of people that are seeking the good of this city. Nonprofits working trying to fix the problems. Historians trying to tell the story. And so I get to see a lot of folks that are seeking the good of the city.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's really cool. And so we've also, side note, I think we've talked about this before. We technically met at Baylor.
We did.
Like extremely briefly.
It was a special brief moment.
There's no way that you remember that.
So I don't actually remember it.
That's okay. Because Brent, so we were both at Baylor for a very short amount of time. We shared time at Baylor. And you were giving a lecture that I was in.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And it was great. I remember that.
Profound.
It was so striking that I remembered you when I moved here. So anyway, but me and my husband moved here 4 years ago now.
Yeah.
And so similarly, we have felt the same way. Part of, also, y'all, part of why I wanted Brent to come and share tonight was ever since Blaze and I moved here, we have, I mean, literally since day one, even though it was June of 2020 when we moved here, so not exactly the most, like, easy time to move to a new place, but we have fallen in love with San Antonio. And it is the first time since I was 18, living in Illinois, that I said, oh, this is somewhere that I want to be forever. You know, I've lived in plenty of places in between there that were great. But this is the first time that I said, oh, this is where I'm going to stay, unless the Lord picks me up and moves me, right? And so part of why I wanted Brent to speak to us tonight is, one, because he loves San Antonio, and I love San Antonio, and so I want us to talk about how much we love that. But also, if we live here, right, and even if you're just passing through or you're deciding to put down roots, we're called to seek the good of the city, right? And so that's what we're going to unpack. We're going to hear some fun stories, but also we want to love where we live, right? In Waco, that's kind of their catchphrase, is love where you live, right? So don't just take, but give into the place that you live in, right? And so we're going to talk about that a little bit tonight.
You know, obviously we're up here figuratively wearing a I Heart SA t-shirt. And I want to know what your opinion is of San Antonio real fast. Okay, so free up your hands where you can show me your hands. I want to see you rate San Antonio, one being like, this is a miserable place, and 10 being like, this is the best place I've ever been. I want all of you to rate San Antonio 1 through 10 right now. I want you to hold up your hands with a score of San Antonio. Can you do that? So let me see your scores right now.
Seven.
Let me see. I've got, I'll call out. Let's hear. We've got an 8, a 10, an 8. We've got a 7, 7, 6. Okay, 8 going on. We've got 7, 8. Okay, 8, 7. Looks like we're averaging 7, 8. So The you know, informal survey says San Antonio scores 7.62 out of 10 possible points in terms of a place to live.
That's
so,
pretty good.
Yeah, I'm
we're
very
starting. And after this conversation, you'll all be out of 10. Okay. So you love San Antonio, and you walked downtown in between Sunday morning and Sunday afternoon. So what changed from I love the city and I love learning about it too, I think now I'm going to tell other people about San Antonio. What made you decide to start this business?
It was by accident. Yeah, okay. I was bored on an airplane. And so I was coming back to the U.S., and I had been on a free walking tour where you don't pay anything. You tip at the end of the tour whatever amount you want. And I was in Moscow, and I went on this tour, and I was like, it was actually a pretty bad tour in Moscow. But the Kremlin's great. And and so as I was flying home, I thought, I wonder what our free tour in San Antonio is like. Yeah. I've never been on it. I like San Antonio. I should go. And I realized we didn't have a free tour in San Antonio. And I said, how hard could it possibly be to start a tour company? Like, that doesn't seem difficult at all. And so May 28, 2018, I started my first tour. And it has been incredibly hard at points. And it's been incredibly wonderful at points. And I knew if I did not do it, someone else would come along and do it. And if I wasn't happy with it, because I am a proud San Antonian at the end of the day. So if there was a less than glorious tour offered, then I'd be upset with myself, because I knew I had the chance to do that and I would have passed by. And now there's something that's a substandard. So May 28th, I started, and June 15th, a company from Austin came down and started offering the same model of tour on top of me.
Oh, no.
2 weeks later, they were upset at me that I existed. I was upset at them that they existed, with Christ love the whole way. And it was a surprise. So we cooperated for 2 years in the same city, and then eventually they faded away into the sunset, and I was able to stay.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's funny. Oh, my gosh. That's amazing. So in all of your work, living here and working here and talking about San Antonio for a living, what do you love about San Antonio, or what do you love most about our city?
Yeah, so the answer came immediately to me, and the answer is the connectedness of San Antonio. Everything in San Antonio is connected, and that is true today, and that is true in our history just as much. And so what I love is that today you can be sitting alongside someone that is a descendant of one of the Alamo defenders. You know, we befriended an old man when I was a kid, and he said, hey, I've got a lot of property in south of San Antonio in Elmendorf, Texas, if y'all know where that is. There's a lot of flooding that happens in San Antonio, if any of you have been around for a flood. And so in 1998, we had a 500-year flood, and it turned up a lot of dirt in his field, and what was in the field, but tons of swords from the Battle of the Alamo. And so he said, would you like a sword from the Battle of the Alamo? And my family said yes. Today, my sister says that she said yes, and she is holding the sword from the Alamo. But the point is, you're like, nice dirt. No, it's not just nice dirt. It's the site of a battle site. And that thing sticking out is actually a historic relic.
Yeah.
But you meet people likewise, Megan, that are just related. You know, we had someone in the church, and she this isn't Texas history or San Antonio history.
Yeah.
She had a corn dog with Elvis Presley. Elvis bought her a corn dog. And you're like, you're kidding. How is that possible?
Yeah.
Like, I don't believe it. I'm 1 degree of separation from Elvis Presley.
True.
Like, and it's because of this church. So I love that.
And now we are all 2 degrees of separation.
Yeah, isn't that special?
You
are welcome.
That was a gift.
But at the same time, the connectedness in San Antonio is like a double-edged sword to me. It's a two-sided coin, because in high school, I knew a kid. We were really good friends. His name was Cameron. Cameron and I would spend the night. Life was good. We were high school friends. Excellent. Cameron's family goes to our church, so I still see Cameron's parents today, so that's great. Cameron's dad is a dentist, and so he's also the dentist that I go visit, and that's great. Also, he wound up as a trustee of the foundation where I work, so my dentist, whose house I spent the night at, was technically my boss, but then his wife invited me for dinner, and so I went over, and I was like, this is all very complicated. It's way too connected. Like, if I somehow tick off my dentist, I could lose my job or something, you know? So I just realized, like, wow, San Antonio's a really small and connected.
Yeah. So anyway. It's kind of a small, big town, yeah, right? That's funny. And that's what we've found since we moved here, too, especially because we spent a year in Houston, which is just a huge place, right? We have found that I feel like San Antonioans, is that the right way to say
yeah,
that? You know,
sure.
Mm-hmm. People that live here, right, are for San Antonio, right? And that's what we found is that there's just more community buy-in to keeping this city beautiful and great and unique and all of those things. And so that's not the case everywhere, especially if you're from here and you're used to that. That is not necessarily the norm, right? Okay, so what are some of your favorite San Antonio history stories? Or what are some of your favorite? Now, you don't have to give us the whole, we'll come on the tour.
Okay.
But what are some of your favorite San Antonio history
San stories? Antonio, everyone thinks like, we think history in San Antonio and we think the Alamo. Yeah. And then like we skip to the World's Fair in 1968. I mean, that was roughly 130 years of history we skip and we're like 1968. And then we skip and we're like, and then there was the Pearl. San Antonio's history consists of the Alamo, Hemisphere, and the Pearl.
Yeah. And are you telling me there's more than that? It's bone chilling.
Actually, it's not. No, I'm just kidding. It's amazing some of those stories that are in those 130 years that's in between that don't get much credit. And I'll give you an example of that. One of the gentlemen that negotiated independence for Texas, if believe it or not, Texas's independence was not fought at the Battle of the Alamo. It was actually signed by a contract several days before the Battle of the Alamo, and nobody told the defenders of the Alamo that we were already independent. So we had this big battle, but we didn't need to anyway. It's a tragedy.
You know, there's a lot of things in history like that.
Yeah,
like the message just
before only, cell phones. If only just, they had FaceTime. Yeah. Exactly. DocuSign. They could have gotten that signature in the news of it sooner.
Yeah,
there
know.
You go. So one of the guys negotiating that was Samuel Maverick. And today we know the word Maverick quite a bit. You know, Maverick cow comes from Samuel Maverick, that he wouldn't brand his cattle. So the Dallas NBA team gets their name from Samuel Maverick.
Yeah, isn't that
great?
That's crazy.
I love that.
That's fun.
And so anyway, Samuel Maverick died in 1870. And his widow inherited all of his property and all of his wealth. In Spanish law, a woman could inherit the man's property. In English law, it had to pass to the next male, but the Spanish said, no, women who run the world, girls. And so the Spanish said, this is good. Mary Maverick inherits all of this land, and she becomes the steward of it, choosing who she'll sell it to. And she winds up selling First Baptist Church its first piece of property in 1870. She signs it over from one of the wives of Texas Independence is where we get our history. So you start digging and you see things that are just way more colorful than you expected.
Yeah.
One of the things that I've really come to appreciate recently is our complicated relationship with Mexico. We have the most insane relationship with Mexico. It's like our ex who we live next door to, who we still like to see at parties. And we decided to adopt a couple kids together. And like, it's super, super complicated. Yeah. So once again, you hear Mexico and you go, oh yeah, the Alamo, I heard about this. But after the Alamo, you know, we become our own country for 9 years, and then we joined the United States. Y'all, there was no police department. There was no sheriffs down here in South Texas. It was really just these random towns and a bunch of ranchers. and eventually cattle disappeared. And the assumption was, I bet the Mexicans came and took our cattle. So there's no one, there's no police to call and to file a police report. What you do is you hire a really strong person who knows how to ride a horse, and you say, go get me my cattle from Mexico. So we call these cattle rustlers, and the cattle rustlers would ride across the border, and they'd say, how many cattle were missing? And they're like, I think it was 20. They're like, let's round up to 120. And they would take 120 cattle from Mexico and bring them to Texas. Well, guess what? Some Mexicans wake up that morning, and they're missing 120 cattle. Whether or not it was the cattle from Texas,
so it's like
doesn't matter.
Bigger and better, but with
yeah,
cattle?
So okay. Mexico does not have a police department in this area, so they hire several strong men who know how to ride horses and send them to cross the border and to steal cattle. Yeah. And so they arrive here and they're like, how many cattle are missing? And they're like, 120. They're like, let's round up to 200. It's fine. And they just steal the cattle and bring them back. And someone else steals the cattle and brings them over.
That's
and
crazy.
It becomes a no man's land where eventually law enforcement does show up, like a band of three people for the entire state of Texas. And they show up and all of these outlaws will just cross the Rio Grande into Mexico and then will cross back into Texas. And it's like whack-a-mole with cattle rustlers. And one of the best known cattle rustlers was this guy named King Fisher, who was chronicled in the New York Times.
That's
and
quite the name.
Oh my gosh, he was fantastic. It wasn't his birth name. But anyway, he was said to wear cowboy chaps, you know, the chaps you put on, that were made out of tiger skin. And that he had bells that he wore on his tiger skin chaps, and that he had elaborate silk shirts, and that all the outlaws knew King Fisher. And y'all, he was in his 20s when he is doing this, the most notorious outlaw in Texas. And you know when he gets arrested, which was like 14 different times, he was in the Bexar County prison, but he was in the Uvalde prison. He was in the San Saba prison. He's like in all these little towns we never think about. And he falls in love with a woman and says, I need to calm down. I need to settle down. He has several kids. And allegedly, he tried to reform his life. But anytime something went wrong, people said, you know who's probably to blame? King Fisher. And you know why they did this, Megan? Because there were no driver licenses back in the 1800s. So if you got pulled over for going 130 on your horse, all you had to say was, my name's King Fisher. And they're like, oh, I've heard about you. You are the worst in the land. So he winds up making all of these enemies, but he's really, the anecdote is that he was a decent guy as he grows into his late 20s. At 31, he accompanies a friend to San Antonio who's having an argument with another guy. They go to a vaudeville theater so that they can set the record straight and put things to peace.
That's how I settle disputes.
Yeah, I mean, that's how we met at that class in Waco, I think. But anyway... And he is gunned down at the Vaudeville Theater just off of Main Plaza. He's 31 years old, and there were 20 bullets that were shot into him. And it's all the result of tension between Texas and Mexico. And that's not Mexico's fault at all. It's just that was the nature of how this land was, that ranchers started moving to New Mexico because Texas was too dangerous of a place. So the more I've gotten to see just little glimpses, I marvel.
That's
I marvel amazing. At Mexico of all things. So.
That's amazing. So y'all, this is a glimpse of what you get if you go on a tour with Brent, all the more. But we also have one scheduled for the single adults coming up. So this is a great advertisement.
It is. So. It's fantastic. So come on the tour. It's like 2 hours with a Labrador with ADHD. You're going to love it. You will walk away and say, I honestly don't remember a single story,
but I had a great time. That's amazing. So watch out for information. Don't worry, y'all. There's more of these stories to come. But okay, so all of that ridiculousness included. How has your work in San Antonio and in telling San Antonio history impacted the way you view our city, the way you love our city? And I know, like you said, we're so connected, right? Mm. But as you've done this work and as you've kind of gone deeper down that path, how's that impacted the way you view San Antonio.
Yeah, I jotted down my notes over the course of like 3 days, and at some point I forgot what I had jotted down earlier, and so I'm just looking at my notes saying, how has my work in San Antonio, how has it impacted the view of the city? Y'all, as we move forward, I told you I have two pretty distinct jobs. One of them, I'm a white-collar banker type with Excel spreadsheets and millionaires. The other, I walk the streets for money. And you can often find me at the intersection of Main and South Flores. So, and as I answer the rest of the questions, really my answers are going to ping pong between those two spheres of work. The one that's really impacted my view of San Antonio is, and how does it make you love the city? How has your work in San Antonio history impacted your view, and how does it make you love the city? For both of my jobs, I have become so much more aware of problems that we have in our community. I just told you I grew up loving San Antonio. I also grew up with about a 0.5% knowledge of San Antonio. And as that knowledge has grown, I've realized, y'all, it's sombering. Like, did you know we used to be ranked number one in the nation for poverty? Detroit was number two. Like, you know, 8 Mile with Eminem and all that. That was number two. San Antonio's number one for years. Yeah. Tremendous problems. And if you want to look at it from the historical side of things, we could talk about San Antonio once had a red light district with all of these brothels and madames and all of this craziness. And you're like, wow, Brent, great thing to mention. But here's the thing. These women that were working in these establishments, they had no other jobs. That was something they could do and something they could make money. And so there they were working. And when they would get pregnant, they would lose their job. And they now have a child that's depending on them. They now have maybe other family members that are counting on the money they were bringing in. And they lose everything, and they are trying to welcome a child into the world. This is 1800 San Antonio, and you look at that and you go, wow, we can talk about a red light district all day long and be like, well, crazy San Antonio, but that's a legitimate problem. And of all things, one of the churches comes along, Travis Park Methodist Church comes along and says, there's a member allegedly that says, we need to take care of these pregnant women. And we need to give them job training so that they don't have to return to a life of sex work. And so they do. And these women, many of them mothers from the red light district, receive the job training, and they go on to be some of the household staff of the mansions in King William District as an alternative way of life forward as a mom to a child after coming from this background. Yeah. How That's has amazing. It affected me being in San Antonio? I grew up in Bulverde, like, which some people called Bull Dirty when I was growing up and hurt my feelings. It was nothing glamorous. There's no country club there. But, you know, it was just, it was a pretty good life as I look back on it. Yeah. And I come here and y'all, my HEB that I go to is south of downtown. It's at South Cross and New Braunfels Avenue. And during summers, there are VIA buses parked in the parking lot. Have y'all seen this? Yes. The VIA buses, and what are they? They are cooling shelters for all the elderly that do not have air conditioning so they can go live inside a bus all day long in the parking lot of my HEB so they don't die at their home. They do the same thing at wintertime when a winter storm comes, heating shelters. I went to Haven for Hope the other day, and by the other day, I mean a year and a half ago. And as I was visiting for work, there was a guy that I looked at, and he was my age. And as I looked at him, I thought, we could have grown up together. Like, you are my generation. Like, maybe we were friends. I don't know. Maybe we went to VBS together. What's the difference between us? He's in a drug recovery program. Mm-hmm. And I thought, was I one decision away from the life that he now finds himself in? Just a simple, he said yes, I said no. Yeah. And when you realize that, the problems just, they grow so much. Mm-hmm. And as a tour guide, do you know what I do? I stand on the sidewalk and I talk to people. And do you really want to know what I hope I get at the end? $1 for my time.
Yeah.
And do you know who I stand alongside? Mm-hmm. A homeless man who is on the sidewalk talking to strangers, hoping that he gets $1 at the end of that time.
Yeah.
And so I just realized it's made me so aware that our community is bigger, it's more difficult, it's more challenged than I knew as a kid.
Yeah, so. And that's kind of similarly to, and you touched on it a little bit, but how has this impacted your faith? I know it'd be hard to walk the streets, you know, telling stories day after day and not for that to rub up against your faith, or vice versa, too. How has your faith impacted your work?
My work has really impacted my faith. The first one, I told you we're going to bounce between categories. Category right now, tour guide. How has the tour guide impacted my faith? It has impacted me knowing, how did a city get here from Spanish missionaries arriving in 1718? Y'all, we were a mission trip. That is how San Antonio came to life back in 1718. They started a mission called Mission San Antonio de Valero, and we get Valero gas from that name, Mission San Antonio de Valero. Today we call it the Alamo. On the tour, I'm going to mention these people from France that showed up. We still see these people from France. They came here for religious reasons. And so here's what I realized, Megan. You know, we need to walk by faith, not by sight. We need to serve our community. We need to show God's love. And we think about that very much in the moment. Like, that's something I need to do today. Or, you know, let's all live in the moment. What I realize is, y'all, we live in a city that is the fruit of faith of people living in the moment in the year 1718, doing what they were called to do by God in faith. And today we have a city and a church because of it. And so just to see that maturity, my work in philanthropy has taught me faith in a different way. We pray for things and God says no. And when I interviewed for my job at the foundation, we're faith-based, and so faith comes up a lot. One of the trustees said, Brent, I want you to understand that what we do is rooted in the Bible. I said, yes, okay, I like that. He said, what I specifically think about is the Pool of Bethsaida. He's like, you know the Pool of Bethsaida. I was like, yeah, it's the Pool of Bethsaida. It's in John chapter 5. The Pool of Bethsaida said that there is, John chapter 5 describes the Pool of Bethsaida, that there are great multitudes of lame, blind, and diseased that are gathered at the Pool of Bethsaida, hoping that they can become better. And who shows up on the scene at the Pool of Bethsaida? Jesus. And what does Jesus do? What do you think? Y'all shout out. What are some ideas? What do you think Jesus does at the Pool of Bethsaida? Come on. It's okay. Heals someone? I mean, there's great multitudes. So healing is involved.
Yeah.
But this guy, he seems like an academic. He's pretty smart. And he probably speaks Latin, if I had to guess. He's exactly right. Alex is exactly right. Do you know what Jesus does? He heals one person, and he walks out of the Pool of Bethsaida with 1,000 lame, sick, dying people that said, why couldn't you have just reached over and touched me as well? This trustee said, Brent, we have $9 million. There will never be enough money. So just like Jesus walked into the Pool of Bethsaida and said, it is your time to be healed, and the rest of you have to wait. The rest of you, the answer is no. He said, so also we go into an environment where everyone is raising their hand saying, give me money, give me money. And we say, you get money and you get money.
Yeah.
And through prayer and through the leading of the Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. And so that's taught me two things. I'm the person that announces, congratulations, you got a grant. And I'm the guy that calls the people and says, I'm so sorry, Jesus has left the pool and there's not a miracle for you this year. And then I've also been that person at the pool. And so it changes how you think about Jesus coming and being like, come on, God, come on, answer my prayer. How come his prayer got answered and mine didn't? And so that's really changed faith
that
to
makes
me.
Sense. That's amazing. So we hear in scripture, right, we have the phrase, seek the good of the city, right? And now some context for that, right? Some of that is said when the Israelites are not where they want to be, and yet they are told, seek the good of the city, even though you're in this horrible situation, right? But, and that's not, for most of us, we're not, you know, we're here by choice because we like San Antonio or because we found ourselves here, but that's still a biblical command for us, is to seek the good of the place that we live, right? To seek the good of the city, to love our neighbor. And so, but that's always been kind of a daunting command for me, is to, because it kind of feels too broad, right? I kind of don't know how to do that, right? And there's so many people trying to do that differently. And so from your perspective, and I ask you this because I think you're achieving this, that you're seeking the good of the city by telling the story of the city. That's one way that we do that. But how do we seek the good of the city? In your work, how have you found, how do we do that well? How do we hear that biblical command and go forth and do that?
So like the Pool of Bethesda, I also had to Google this. So it comes from Jeremiah 29, and this is when the Israelites have been sent in exile to Babylon, and they're grumbling, and they're like, God, why did you force me away from the place that I loved? Yeah, this is your fault, and also you can fix this, so like, let's fix it. They're unhappy, and Jeremiah writes to the Israelites as they are in exile. And what it reminds me is that life goes places we don't expect it to go. And we're like, how did I wind up in Babylon? This is not part of my 5-year plan. This is, oh gosh, is there a control Z? And the answer is no, you're in Babylon. So I read this and I was like, interesting. Life goes places where we don't intend. And what does Jeremiah tell them? Yeah, sure. You're in a place where you don't want to be. Look for the good. Seek the good of the city, and you will also find good for yourself. It says, marry your sons and your daughter. Lay down roots. Get comfortable in the place that you don't like. It's like, okay, okay. So as I was wrestling with this, I thought, okay, step one. Literally, I wrote it down as step one. Does good exist? If you're going to seek something, you know, there are people seeking Bigfoot out there. I am not one of those people because I do not believe Bigfoot exists. And so I go to bed at night without worrying about this. If it does not exist, don't seek it.
Yeah.
Question number one, does the good exist? Abraham Lincoln is attributed as saying many things that someone wrote on Facebook. But one of those things he's attributed as saying is, if you look for the bad in mankind expecting to find it, you surely will. If you look for the bad, you will find it. And I paraphrase that on behalf of Jeremiah to say, if you look for evidence that there's nothing you can do, you will find it. If you look for evidence that there is no good, you will discover it every single time. And I think we do this often. We find ourselves in a Babylon and we're like, well, I can't do anything about this situation, so I'm just going to sit here and wait for someone else to come fix this for me. I know people that are in a crux, an intersection of life, and so they sit. Their choice is to sit next to a window in an armchair and read a book, and they wait for a knight in shining armor to ride up on a horse as the house is burning that they're sitting in. And I'm like, oh, it amazes me. It shocks me. Although I've been there myself.
Yeah.
Not in terms of necessarily a relationship or a job, but instead I was getting ready to go to New York. This is a random story, but bear with me. I was getting ready to go to New York. I had a meeting beforehand. I had to leave all my luggage in the car and went to this meeting. It's like 143 degrees outside. At the end of the meeting, I get in the car. I'm going to the airport, and I realize that my hair gel or like conditioner or something is over the size limit, and I got a Ziploc bag and I went to open this just to put a little bit in the bag, and when I opened the cap, it exploded all over me, and I'm wearing like tie, white shirt, suit, all of this, and it's just like conditioner, like just everywhere. And I wasn't driving, I was parked in a parking lot. And so what did I do when this happened? I sat there. I was like, something bad has happened. Someone will come help me. And so I just, for like 5 seconds, I sat, and then I realized,
no one's coming.
Like, I'm covered in hair conditioner, and like.
Also, if they did, what would they do for you?
And I just realized, Bray, you have to like, do something. You can do something. So, to paraphrase Jeremiah, we will look for a reason that we cannot do something. Yeah. And in the truth, Jeremiah says, yes, you can. You can go do something about it. As I was mulling this over, the story of Jonah came to me of all things. And I don't want to brag, but I read an entire book of the Bible in preparation for this. Turns out, Jonah's only 4 chapters.
It's great.
Yeah, I got to the end and I was like, where's the rest of it? Anyway, so Jonah, 4 chapters. What happens? God tells Jonah to go to Nineveh and to tell the people that their days are limited and that the end is coming. And so get ready and buckle up. And God gives this instruction to Jonah, a sense of mission. And Jonah decides on his own, there's nothing I can do about that, Megan. And so he's like, I think I'll get on a ship and go somewhere else. And this terrified me because I travel all the time. And I was like, what is the modern day equivalence of this story of Jonah? Like he gets on an airplane and then like the plane encounters turbulence and a giant storm and all the passengers are like, who's the problem of this? And then they open the emergency exit and they throw this guy out. Like, anyway, the point is this. Labrador with ADHD. Jonah decides there's nothing he can do. He looked for the excuse and he found it. Nineveh is hopeless. And so all this bad stuff comes about because he's decided there's nothing good he can do. And what does God do? He resets the story, doesn't he? There's a ship, there's a man overboard, there's a big fish, and there's vomit. And all of a sudden, there's Jonah going in the direction he was supposed to go in the first place. So the first thing is, does goodness exist for us to seek it? The second thing is, if you agree that there is goodness, then how do you seek it? What is it that you do? If Jeremiah tells us to go do something about it, and I wrestled with this. What do you do? You know that goodness is out there. You know there's something you can do. How do you do this? I'll tell you something that just grinds my gears is seeing people mismanage things. I hate it. Mismanaging a meeting, mismanaging money. Do y'all remember during COVID? Do y'all remember that thing that happened? It was in 2020. It was like awful. It was real bad. During COVID in May 2020, the USDA awarded grants to organizations that would distribute food to families in need. And do you remember they awarded a $39 million grant to an agency in San Antonio, a for-profit company called Create a Date that had the most mind-numbing name? It is C-R-E, the letter A. Oh, no, it's Cree. Okay, so it's C-R-E, the number 8, A-D, and then the letter 8.
Oh,
or the number 8, whatever. They're doubting me now, but yeah, it's fine. It is awful.
That's That's horrible.
They are awarded a $39 million contract, and they list as their experience that they've worked with HEB, they've worked with Home Depot as a party planning company, and HEB and Home Depot immediately said, we've never heard of them, we've never worked with them. But the contract was awarded, and the guy that received the contract, running Create a Date, receiving this $39 million, it turns out he did like 5% of what he was supposed to do with the money. And in the meantime, he pocketed $2.3 million of the funds that were supposed to be spent to bring food to San Antonio families and families in this region of the country. So one day I'm driving down I-10 and there's a reckless driver who was not me, and he's coming up through the lanes behind me. Have you ever seen this? A car that's speeding, and you're like, oh my gosh, here he comes. And so I see him changing lanes, and this car cuts me off. It's a Cadillac Escalade, black Cadillac Escalade, and the license plate says, Create a Date. And I said, oh, I know who you are. So anyway, I let him be. But the point is this, both in the traffic, and with that $39 million contract, the man sees that there is something good that can be done. There is a role that we can play. One is on behalf of ourselves, and one is on behalf of society. Mm-hmm. And the guy, seeing that something could be done, decides, I am going to take this opportunity, and I am going to make it about myself. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what happened to him. I would like to think he's miserable, but finding salvation and forgiveness. But the truth is, I don't know what happened to him. But that is an example of someone that sees the ability to do something, mm-hmm. but makes it about themselves. Yeah. Jonah did the same exact thing. Mm-hmm. Do you know what winds up happening to Jonah? This is in chapter 2. Chapter 2 is the entire time in the fish. Chapter 3, he shows up to Nineveh. He goes through the city and says, repent, repent. And do you know what the people do? What do they do, Megan?
Repent.
They repent. And how does he respond to this?
He gets so upset.
He is so ticked off. He's like, what? And so he leaves the city. Do y'all remember what goes on? He leaves the city. He goes to a hill. He creates himself a little bit of a shelter. And then what does God send on that hill, that mound of dirt? What is sent? A plant that grows above him and provides shade from the sun. And Jonah falls in love with a plant. That's chapter 3. And then God removes that plant and kills the plant. And Jonah is so upset about this plant. And mm-hmm. God's response is, how are you upset about the death of a plant when you do not mind the death of an entire city of Nineveh that you are not concerned about? And God says, Jonah, your priorities are messed up here. You see that there's goodness, but you have entirely misconstrued what it's supposed to be. So,
yeah, that's good.
Megan, it's frustrating.
Yeah.
And instead, in my work with tours specifically, I have seen people that see good, they act in a way that's wonderful for our community. One of those is the Spanish governor's palace. This woman named Adina Emilia De Zavala of De Zavala Street, as we all know. De Zavala sees this pawn shop and she says, this is the most amazing structure. And the city's like, I disagree. Let's tear it down. This is 1915. She's like, no, we should save this pawn shop because it's really special. And the city's like, no, let's tear it down. And she fights for 15 years to save this pawn shop. And it's on my tour that I'm going to take you on to see what happened to the pawn shop. But needless to say, it's considered a treasure today that we saved the pawn shop. Adina Emilia De Zavala says, I think there is something I'm going to do, I can do, and it is for not her own sake. She didn't benefit at all from it, but for the sake of the community, I can do it.
Yeah.
Seeking the good. And there's one more story I wanted to tell Megan. I know we have a final question.
No, it's great.
2 weeks ago, I encountered a very strange situation. Now, I've encountered many things as a tour guide. Many, many, many things. And they're not all appropriate for me to repeat. But In this case, I wrapped up a really nice tour 2 weeks ago. I had a couple from Scotland. I had a couple from Connecticut and Delaware. And I had a couple from Mexico that were there. I had 8 people. Very diverse. And so we wrap up. Everyone's like, oh, my gosh, you're the best tour guide ever, like a Labrador. But anyway. and I said goodbye to everyone. And this couple from Mexico circles back to me afterward. And they have a third person with them. They have a man who appears to be homeless with them. And they said, hey, Brent, you're so connected in the city and you know so many things. This man needs help. Can you help him? And I was like, because it's a tricky thing. Mm-hmm. And I understand the trickiness of it being the tour guide on the streets and also the philanthropist that has listened to every nonprofit in San Antonio. It's tricky. They said he hasn't eaten in several days and he was attacked this morning. Mm-hmm. And I said, attacked? And they said, yeah, and he doesn't want to tell anyone. So he saw us and he came and told us. Mm-hmm. And they said he only speaks Spanish and he just got here from Mexico a couple days ago. Mm-hmm. And I said, what do you mean attacked? And they said, someone tried to stab him while they were robbing him. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, what does he need? They said he cut his hand. I said, let me go see if I can find a Band-Aid. I literally went to find a Band-Aid. I struggled with it. I finally find a Band-Aid. I walk up to the man. He holds up his hand, and his hand is sliced halfway through his hand. And I realize we can't put a Band-Aid on it. Mm-hmm. And so I told them, I said, we can't put a Band-Aid on this. And they said, well, he needs help. And I said, I think we need to call the authorities. This is a crime. Someone has tried to stab him mm-hmm. and has cut him halfway through his hand. And they said, don't call the authorities. Mm-hmm. And someone at the park told me that I finally got involved looking for the Band-Aid. He said, don't call the authorities. Mm-hmm. I said, a crime's happened. We should call the authorities if there's a crime. And they said, the man does not want to risk having authorities. And I thought to myself, what are you supposed to do in this? Mm-hmm. We don't trust. This is such a complicated situation. And you can say what you want about the undocumented man being here. But the point is, his hand was actively bleeding. Mm-hmm. He is going to lose his hand if someone doesn't address this. And so I said, I think if you talk to the police about a crime or a medical emergency that they will not ask questions about paperwork. Yeah. And they said, just don't do it. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, we don't have a choice. So I went to the police. I found a police officer and I said, excuse me, hypothetically speaking, if there was a guy who had been stabbed, who was undocumented, how does that play out? Mm-hmm. And the police officer said, if there's been a crime and if there's a medical emergency, then it will probably result in us not asking questions mm-hmm. about that documentation. I said, probably? And he said, probably.
Okay. I said, yeah.
And then I had to decide, y'all. So what should I do? What would you do? Would you get the police and bring them to this situation? What would you do? This guy is trusting you. And I had to trust Megan. Mm-hmm. that they would help this man to the best of their abilities. And so that's what I did. I filed a police report. The police came, 4 officers. The guy holds up his hand, bleeding. They ask him about the attack. 2 guys had tried to mug him. 4 a.m., he had been bleeding for 12 hours. Mm-hmm. And the paramedics came, and they stitched up his hand. Mm-hmm. And they took care of him. And they connected him with a nonprofit, and that was the end of the story.
That's awesome.
And once again, I know you might have mixed feelings about that story, but here's the point. If someone is about to die in front of you, we have a responsibility to do good, to seek the good. And I was scared to death, but I had to trust there is goodness that we can take care of our people here in our community, even if we're scared of the authorities. And so, anyway,
that's great. That's yeah. Well, in responding in that moment, I mean, that's an act of faith, right? To decide, okay, the Holy Spirit's going to be with me while I figure this out. But that doesn't mean you're not actively, like, you know, kind of panicking while that happens, right? But that's, yeah. So specifically at FBCSA, because you've also been a church member here long enough to kind of know our identity as a church. And so we're a downtown church. We're a historic church. How can FBCSA, or how does FBCSA seek the good of the city in our own way, in where we are here in the middle of San Antonio?
I wrestled with this question last. How does, how can, First Baptist? Yeah, how can?
Pick your favorite version.
But
of
no,
that.
I think it's the same. Yeah. Y'all, I want to tell you about a wedding I went to last year that just, no, I won't tell you about the wedding, but I'll tell you about the church. I went to a wedding at a church. It was a gorgeous church. It was all new construction, Megan, mm-hmm. but it was made to look like it was old, mm-hmm. like European castle-like picture. And it was in the middle of nowhere in a rather wealthy area of the state. I will describe it that closely. Wealthy, in the middle of nowhere, gorgeous multi-million dollar new construction castle-like church surrounded by acres and acres of vacant land around it. And as I sat in this wedding, I wound up disagreeing with some of the stuff said in the wedding. And so I was sitting there thinking about other things as my mind wanders like a Labrador with ADHD. And I thought to myself, why does this church exist? Mm-hmm. It's in the middle of nowhere. And these families represented in the marriage, they were members of this church. And in fact, I knew quite a few members of this church. And I realized this is a very conservative group of people. Mm-hmm. This is a conservative group of people that would rather find a place of their own than they would be part of a congregation that they may not see eye to eye with at 100%. Mm-hmm. And so their decision was to build a church of their own as an isolated fortress in the middle of territory that no one would access, mm-hmm. and they spent millions of dollars to do it, and now they have a church for themselves. Yeah. And I thought to myself, how do I feel about this? What is faith? Mm-hmm. What is the point of a church? And part of a church is for you to gather with believers to worship God. It is for us to grow. It is for you to nurture a future generation. I get it.
Yeah.
But my interpretation of what I saw is that this church had decided to do it through isolationism. Mm-hmm. If we will isolate everything else, then we will have the families and the church and the faith that we want. And what I want you to know is that although First Baptist is surrounded by parking lots, acres of parking lots, we are clearly not that church. Yeah. We are not isolated in the middle of the woods, y'all. We're not down a gravel road. But my question is, that's the exterior of our church. Is the interior of our church the same as that church in the middle of the woods?
Yeah.
And that's not a question for us to analyze, well, this many members. It's a question to analyze ourselves. Are we isolationist, mm-hmm. or are we trying to engage and minister and be missional to the community around mm-hmm. us? And so I wanted to wrap up with a story on this point, and then we'll go wherever you want.
Yeah.
I have the great privilege of having a good friend who is a very wealthy individual who invited me to her birthday party and said, I've got a seat on the jet for you and we're flying off this
weekend.
Okay,
that's the level.
Yeah,
okay.
It's,
sorry,
it's,
we had to adjust.
Yeah,
to
it's
okay.
Just, I'm not looking to brag. I just want context. Anyway, this friend is super wealthy, and I want you to understand how rich she is. She has so much money, she never has to work. Also, she is much older than me, just to clarify.
I was going to ask if it was Taylor Swift. But
yeah.
No.
I am one degree of separation from Taylor Swift, too, but that's another. I know. She's my cousin. So listen, this good friend of mine, the way I met her is that we worked in the same place and she had a job, not because she needed money, but because she was tired of people asking her to do stuff since she didn't have a job and to be a socialite and she doesn't like socialites. So she took a job as a disguise so that no one will bother her. So there I am working with this lady, and at the time at my job, I was in charge of a bunch of stuff. I was in charge of finance and HR, and I was in charge of the building itself. If something random went on, we were kind of patriarchal, where it's like, we'll get a guy to fix it, and apparently I was the guy. They were in the wrong hands. But anyway, it was my job. So one day I went to the men's room. And during an event, we had all these people there. I went to the men's room, and I do have some sense of, like, OCD, and I'm kind of a perfectionist. And so as I was in the men's room, I saw there was water on the floor, like a little bit of water. And in my brain, I was like, someone could slip. This is a hazard, you know? This is a lawsuit waiting to happen. So I got some napkins, and I just put them on this little bit of water in the middle of the floor, and what I noticed is that the napkins entirely soaked up with water, and I was like, why is there so much water? And then I like looked under the stall, and I realized the entire area was like flooded, and a toilet had overflowed. And that was not apparent when I thought it was just some random water left from the person mopping. Mm-hmm. So, and you know in the Titanic, how it sinks and like breaks into, and then there's a lot of debris in the ocean?
Oh, no. Oh, no. Sorry, it took me a second to get there. But
there was debris in the ocean. And so I was like, oh, my gosh, this is not a good situation. And so I told our staff, I was like, we've got a problem in the men's room. Like, we have all these people here, the men's room, we've got to close it. And I was like, we have to fix it. And fix it means you've got to close the stall and put a sign on it. Fix it also means there is no one to take care of the bathroom floor. It is me and only me. And so I was like, it's fine. I'll take one for the team. I'll do this. And there I am gearing up with like a bunch of paper towels. And the men's room door opens. And in walks my millionaire friend. And she has trash bags on both of her arms with rubber bands. And she said, here, tooties. And she put my hands in trash bags with rubber bands. And she said, let's fix the Titanic crash that's here. And we spent about 30 minutes on our hands and knees mopping up the floor and fixing this problem that no one else needed to do. And it was not at all in her job description, at all. She was there because I was her friend, and she wasn't going to let me do something by myself. And you look at that, you say a millionaire with a multi-millionaire with trash bags and rubber bands, cleaning up a toilet that overflowed. That's countercultural, mm-hmm. Megan. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what Jesus always asked us to be, was countercultural. I think the isolation model is that she stayed in her office and said, I'm going to think about you. I'm going to pray about you. I even Googled some ways you could fix a toilet and how you could sanitize the floor. Yeah. She was there alongside me. Mm-hmm. And y'all, because of that, she is one of my very, very favorite people in the face of the planet because she was there alongside me. Mm-hmm. So when I think about our church, you ask Brent, what can we do about seeking the good of the city? I think we need to spend less time in our office with the door closed and knowing that there's someone out there that's having to clean up, and instead go open the door and join them with trash bags and rubber bands. That's my idea. I think our church does that well. Communities Under the Bridge, you mentioned, that's great. That's great. But Megan, there's only so much that we can do as a church. Megan can organize things all day long. The question is, are you showing up? And if you are you showing up with the Spirit to do something about our community and to make it better? And so to me, that's what it means to seek the good of the city, and you will prosper yourself. That's what our church can do, I think.
Yeah. That's amazing. Can we thank Brent for... sorry, I kept you a long time, but would you be willing to take a question if there are any? We're not going to ask for more stories because that's on the tour, but any quick questions for Brent? Laura? Wow. We have closure. Okay.
Kind of.
Well, yeah.
Prison would be better, yeah. But
okay.
Like...
Fair. Okay. But thank you for sort of closing.
Thank you, Laura. That's great.
That's funny. Any other questions? We good? Josiah?
Senior.
With the hospital.
He was not desperately bleeding, but the police told me call the non-emergency number. It's not like his heart's about to stop type of a thing. He was just actively bleeding slowly, but not like gushing blood. And that's what the police officer told me to do, and that's what I did. So I am told EMS has no legal responsibility. So if you call EMS purely, then they will absolutely help someone, and it is none of their business. The police have to weigh it a little bit more.
Yeah.
So because I work EMS, if we get a call like that, we'll treat somebody regardless of insurance, and we would definitely take them to the hospital.
And then from there, the hospital normally doesn't either, or at least Blaze at University.
But if you accept a ambulance ride, you are on the hook to pay for that ambulance.
You have to
ask someone before you call that ambulance.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, that is true. Okay, can we thank Brent one more time?
Thank y'all.
You're the best. okay, so I know we laughed a lot tonight, but I also want to end in prayer. And so, as we do, I want us to pray for each other around tables, specifically about how can we seek the good of the city, whether that's a small way, like come to Cub with us in a few weeks, or if you've noticed something around you, or if there's a scenario where you can put trash bags on your arms with rubber bands. But that is something that we need to keep in front of us, is how can we seek the good of the city and seek to allow San Antonio to be a place where Jesus is reflected, right? And so let's pray for one another around tables as we go and then take food to go. But thank you all for being here, especially our new folks. Thanks for coming tonight.